is time to put away the bias, the lies, and deceit and bring forth real talk from real people about real news. Providing the out loud truth and capturing the essence of a new generation all in a fast-paced hour. This is Viewpoint This Sunday.
Welcome to another Viewpoint This Sunday. This is Malcolm Out Loud.
So as of right now, the coronavirus is an epidemic in the continent of Asia. It's not a pandemic because it hasn't become an epidemic in two continents. Hopefully it doesn't become a pandemic. I think in the next week or so, we'll have a good idea if this epidemic is peaking or not. If sustained transmission begins in other countries, which unfortunately seems pretty likely at this point, if that happens, it's unlikely that it can be contained. So I do think this will end up being a pandemic.
Well, the voice you hear on the audio clip there is Dr. Mike Hansen. And he, as you see, he's comparing the epidemic versus a pandemic and what's really behind this, because a lot of people get it wrong. So I thought, let's start with that. And that is our lead story today, friends, is the coronavirus, although there is a lot of other news we'll get to. Well, let me tell you up front here, this is nothing to fool around with at this point. The World Health Organization has warned that the window of opportunity to contain the international spread of this epidemic that has killed thousands of people was closing. As the virus now has spread to over 26 countries, and now you're seeing like there's a large cluster in South Korea, you're seeing Iran is in there, Lebanon, Italy, the Ukraine, you get the picture. And then you've got these cruise ships that are, dotting around the world. So it's become really about containment. And once that containment, once that point we're by that, we then have a full-blown pandemic. And there are other issues and challenges with that. There is a lot to this story, and I want to get started here and talk about that right up front, the international spread of this. Let's start that with Ilana Friedman. Ilana, as you know, is a veteran intelligence analyst here and a political commentator at America Out Loud. So, Ilana, this, again, the coronavirus, there is so much misinformation out there. We're going to talk a little bit later in the show with the doctor about the origins of this thing and where it came from and all that. But let's talk about current day right now, where we're at. And you hear the doctor up front talk about the potential of a pandemic. You've been speaking about this. You've been reporting on this. What do you think happens next with this virus? Can we get it under control, or do you see a pandemic?
Yes, Malcolm, I think that this statement is a bit deceiving, because I believe the window has already closed. There are people walking around this country who have a asymptomatic exposure. We don't know if they have the virus or if they don't have the virus. You know, the other day, I live in the middle of nowhere. I have a farm, and we don't we're not really near anything. But I had to go into the big city the other day because I had to get some work done and get some. I had to replace my telephone, my smartphone. So I went into the store, and as we were talking, it took time to transfer the content from one phone to another. And as we were talking, the man who was helping me told me that we got to talking about the virus, because everybody talks about the virus now. And he said to me, just last week, a woman came in and she said she had been to China. And guess where she was? She was in Wuhan. Wow. In November. I don't think that, and some people, are carriers. So some people seem to have an immunity to this. They don't get sick, but they may be carrying the virus. Mm-hmm. And we just don't know. So I think the window has closed. I think there are many more cases out there than we know about. I do think the assessment that that we will know in the next week is probably a little bit optimistic. I would say in the next few weeks, we should have a better idea how much of an epidemic we are likely to have in this country. And if it does become an epidemic, then of course we will be having a pandemic on our hands, because right. It's already popped up in a dozen different countries around the world.
Yeah, well said, Ilana. And I like your story there about that, because it reminds people about the seriousness of wherever you're at. And that's part of the problem we started to see up front. And one of the initial questions I had is, are we doing enough? Are we doing enough to protect ourselves? You see these cruise ships in and out of ports. You hear all the news reports. But there's also a lot more unknown about this virus. It is quite fascinating, the story behind this, which we'll talk about a little later in the show, people. But it really is a story about espionage on the high seas. And as we get more into that, I'm not kidding you, there's a lot to this. And it really did not start in China. It started in Canada, right here in North America, actually. We'll get more into that a little bit after here. Let me bring on now Dennis Santiago. Dennis is an American strategist, a philosopher patriot, focuses on strategic warfare, asymmetric warfare, arms control, global stability. Dennis, we hadn't had a chance yet to talk about the coronavirus. There's a lot of bad information out there, as I say. And just because whether you're a carrier or you have it or not does not mean it's an immediate death sentence, number one. And there's a lot as to why the Asians are struggling with this. They are more susceptible to it, the way it's in the makeup and the DNA. And we'll touch on that a little bit after as well, explain that to folks here. But how confident are you or not in us being able to control this thing moving forward?
I'm not very confident at all, to tell you the truth. The spread of it is spreading through emerging countries, which do not have the same kinds of medical facilities that first world nations do.
Good point.
And there is, once it gets into them, and you couple it with the fact that global travel is a constant and ongoing thing, the science of propagation basically says that it's going to be everywhere in and there's really, I don't really believe that there's a way to stop the exponential growth of it from going everywhere. So at this point, I think we are in a race against time to figure out how to mobilize what are really our pandemic response resources. I mean, you can already see military bases being activated as quarantine zones.
Exactly.
That are beginning to happen here. You can see that they are sharing the virus with as many laboratories as possible in order to push rushing to getting to some sort of vaccine, if it's possible to come up with one as quickly as possible and manufacture it. But on top of that, I mean, there are other effects that are going on here. The global economy is already beginning to crack from this.
That's right. Yeah, I want to talk about that economic impact one second, but let me also say the Dr. Nancy Messonnier, the director of the National Center for Immunization and Respiratory Diseases at the CDC, she says, we're not seeing community spread here in the U.S. yet, but it's very possible, even likely, and that it may get a foothold here in the United States. Our goal continues to be to slow the introduction of the virus into the states, but this buys us more time, as Dennis was just saying as well, to prepare communities for the possible spread of this thing. So again, our goal here, my goal is to give you real information. A little bit later in the program, you're going to hear from another doctor out of Europe, Dr. Joel Holmes, and get more into the truth behind this coronavirus. And he's got a fascinating book out. I don't want to lose sight of that, people, and tell you about that as well. Dennis, let me get your thoughts on the economic impact. I want to tell people, see, here's what happens when you have a global environment. When you're talking about this globalist attitude, and the point of is the level and the amount of manufacturing we pushed over to China, and one of the ones who's taken a real hit up front on this is Apple.
Not just Apple, but pretty much all industries, the auto industry, any manufacturing industry the world is completely interlinked at this point. The supply chain is global, and a disruption in any major manufacturing center anywhere in the world will have ripple effects with all other economies. Because of that, the world is extremely vulnerable to this kind of disruption, and a virus like this breaking down one manufacturing center. So what's happening to Apple is they can't get parts, and the same thing's happening to automakers in Korea. They can't get parts because this part of China that is affected, that they have basically had to quarantine and shut down, nothing goes in or out, sure, is unable to supply essential parts. And so they can't bring product to market. And because of that, Apple announced that they're not going to make their quarterly numbers. That is for what is really a high demand commodity. It's debilitating, and that's going to have ripple effects in other things too. China manufacturing, I mean, you know, they also make a large portion of the world's generic drugs. Okay.
That's right.
So what's going to happen here is the whole assumption that global economy and global supply chains, they are more efficient from the point of view of doing business, but man, they're also pretty vulnerable. And we're getting a lesson in the harsh reality.
That's right. Well, remember now, remind people they're the second largest economy in the world. And again, a lot of this manufacturing that Trump has started to bring back to the States here is over in China, quite frankly. As I just mentioned, the antibiotics, you hear the Apple piece, you hear the technology, and you get the point, people. Even when I was a young kid, I remember turning everything over and it always would say made in China or made in Taiwan. We used to joke about that as a kid. And here we are all these years later, and that's still the case. But, you know, maybe these kinds of things are a wake-up call. Speaking of wake-up calls, let's talk about politics, people. I'll tell you what, the Las Vegas was something else here, if you didn't see that one. Finally, they woke up. The parade of Democrats woke up and they started to hit each other, which is really the idea of a debate. The idea of a debate is you debate each other and you try to do what Trump was very successful back in 2015, 2016, and you try to make your opponents look inferior so that you get the upper hand. Finally, the Democrats realize, oh, this is a debate, okay, and have had it here. So I want to play a clip for you right next here from that debate, and let me do that, and then we'll bring on someone else on the other side of that clip.
I'd like to talk about who we're running against. A billionaire who calls women fat broads and horse-faced lesbians. And no, I'm not talking about Donald Trump. I'm talking about Mayor Bloomberg.
I believe in democratic socialism working people, not billionaires.
None of them accused me of doing anything other than maybe they didn't like a joke I told. And let me put, there's agreements between two parties that wanted to keep it quiet, and that's up to them.
We are not going to beat Donald Trump with a man who has who knows how many non-disclosure agreements and the drip, drip, drip of stories of women saying they have been harassed and discriminated against.
That was the actual debate where Elizabeth Warren called Bloomberg out with using some of his adjectives that he has described women as. Looks like the Democrats have a little bit of a problem. Looks like that they've come home to roost there, I guess you might say. Let's bring on here Brian Gold will join us as well on the show. Brian served in the U.S. Army and U.S. Special Forces for over 3 decades. He now works for the Department of Defense. And Brian, I know you love politics. I know you follow this stuff. First of all, what did you think of that clip and that entire debate and what's happening here in the Democrat field?
I think that debate was a complete total dumpster fire. But unfortunately, it's indicative right now of what the Democratic Party's fighting. They can't debate economics because all their economic policies are absolutely atrocious. You can't say, well, the economy's running really good, so we're going to tear it down. Trump's offered another tax break in September, so they can't run on, well, we're going to raise your taxes really high. Unemployment's down really far, so we can't say, well, we're shutting down the fossil fuel industry and putting a bunch of you out of work. So the only thing they had left is personal attacks. And Nevada was no different than what the next couple of debates are going to be like and all their little rallies. They're just going to be personal attacks.
Well, wait a minute, Brian. But what about the fact that the Earth is going to blow up within 12 years because of climate?
Well, you know, AOC can't even show her face around the scientific community anymore after that little blurb. But unfortunately, that's the emotional a really kind of chaos they create. You mentioned earlier about the coronavirus. It's the same thing. We've been talking about this in Los Angeles for how long now that bubonic plague and typhus and typhoid are making a comeback in Los Angeles.
Right.
But they don't want to talk about that because that's their little bastion of liberalism there, and that's their scientific petri dish. They want to talk about the Chinese because Chinese are bad. I'm surprised they haven't blamed that on the Russians yet. I'm thinking that's probably next.
Well, no, we are going to talk about the Russians later in the show because they are blaming things again on. That's the next chapter is Russia, Russia, well, Russia. You bet.
Oh, it's insane. But really, the only thing they have to argue now is emotion. It's just it'll just be 100% emotional driven.
Yeah, you bring up some really good points there because they do make it a very emotional. That's always been the game plan for the Democrat establishment. They play very well to those emotions, emotional campaigns and things. And you're right. It's kind of hard to run on some of these other things. Well, let me tell folks here, this last debate, by the way, had a record audience, incredible, that tuned in to see what would Bloomberg do. This was probably not good news for the mayor. And there was a combined audience on that debate of close to 20 million. Now, this is far exceeds any of the other debates they've had by far. And of course, NBC and MSNBC were thrilled to see that kind of a turnout as they were broadcasting this thing from Vegas, from the Paris theater there. Ilana, what do you think about at this point now? So here's one of the things I find very interesting. Some of the talk is being said, we could very potentially have a brokered convention in the Democratic field, which hasn't happened since the 1950s, okay? And there's a real possibility of that. But here's what's not lost on me as well that I don't think should be lost on anybody. You know, I've been talking to you all over the past few years and telling you that there's a rearranging of the deck chairs happening here. We could call it on the Titanic, actually, with both political parties. You see Trump come in and take over the Republican Party and the MAGA movement and the GOP. They're kind of in the corner sucking their thumb as well right about now, quite frankly, Ilana. And the Democrats here, you've got here Bloomberg, Mike Bloomberg, who was a previous Republican and independent, really was not a Democrat at all for all those years. And you've got a socialist, proudly wears the label, who is also not a Democrat, but a confirmed socialist, who could absolutely be a dictator of one of these third world countries. And they are running to head up the Democrat Party. Ilana, you had just come alive from the last 20 years. You'd be blown away at today's modern politics. Yeah?
You know, Malcolm, I think that what's going on is historic. It's also hysterical. I think the Democrat candidates are really concerned about having a brokered convention. They want to have a final candidate mm-hmm. on the first ballot. But what we're hearing now is that if the first ballot doesn't take, they're going to go to a brokered convention. And that's when all the power comes out of the corners. And Michael Bloomberg holds a lot of the cards because he's buying everybody off. And this is something that is very concerning to me because this is absolutely as un-American as you possibly can get in this process.
I guess here's the big question, Dennis, I wonder here. The real path forward, unless that brokered convention takes shape and people come out of the corner, as Ilana just said, and whoever would come out of the corner, we'll see, and we kind of have our suspicion who that might be. But doesn't this look at this point, or does it, that it might be Bernie Sanders in one corner, and Donald Trump in the other corner, which would be a historical election to the likes of what we've never seen before?
We're headed in the direction of what the 2016 election was supposed to be. I'm married to a Democrat, right? And we talk about this kind of stuff. And
you're talking about in real life now. Let's tell people your wife is a Democrat, you're saying.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
You know, I didn't want people to think you were married to the Democrat Party. I just want to let them know it's your wife you're speaking about.
No. I sleep with the enemy. Okay, which is fine.
I knew there was something odd about you, fellow.
Yeah. But here's the thing. So the feeling coming out of the 2016 election is was that the DNC stole the nomination away from Bernie Sanders.
And they did,
which is true. And the feeling among Democrats again today is that they're getting ready to steal the nomination away from Bernie Sanders. And the guy that is being pointed at in terms of doing it at the moment is the only guy with money, which is Mike Bloomberg, because, you know, so he's being basically the comparison there is the man is attempting a leverage buyout of the DNC.
That's right. That's right. Dennis, do you think by chance that what you just said is a great setup for this? Do you think there's a possibility that a lot of Democrats, when you mentioned your wife and others, the Democrats that are really sore about the 2016 election, and let's face it, Dennis, they never got over it. Nobody ever did because they knew there was a lot of bad things that happened there. Do you think that a lot of them might be motivated now to vote for Bernie Sanders because of that?
I think some of them will be motivated to vote for Bernie because it's a sympathy vote. And I think others, because, you know, his message of a radical change in terms of the direction the country is going in the direction towards poorness, mm-hmm. it doesn't sit well with centrist Democrats. So while I think that will buoy Sanders' chances in the primaries, I don't think it'll do him well at all in general election because, you know, the bottom line is Trump holds all the cards in the general.
Well, listen, you're listening to the voices there of Dennis Santiago, Ilana Friedman, Brian Gould. Before we continue on, we'll talk about Roger Stone and also, which is what's happened to him is very, very interesting. And also, you see the Afghanistan agreement with the United States and the Taliban is also, it looks like it's on track here. There's a lot to discuss there as well. Let me remind everybody there that it's all back at AmericaOutloud.com, friends. So we, again, the amazing talent and people and experts we have back on the platform are truly amazing. Our writers that from around the world, our bloggers and columnists, our show hosts, you can find it on podcast or on America Out Loud Talk Radio. There's a lot there to explore, and please do that. But remember also to share it. Share it with the world and let folks know what's really going on here. There's a lot, more so what I hear from folks a lot, a great deal, is a lot of truth there. And then there's, again, the coronavirus, that it is a biological warfare weapon. We'll talk more in just moments a little bit later in the show here, actually, with Dr. Joel Holmes. He's a new expert out of Europe for us and a writer here. We'll discuss that as well. Let's bring it back in and out. Roger Stone here. U.S. District Judge Amy Berman Jackson. You know the name by now, I'm sure, if you follow this stuff. So she handed down her sentence of 40 months, a $20,000 fine, 2 years probation, 250 hours of community service, and shut the hell up, Roger Stone, was her warning to the guy here. Trump called Stone's prosecution a disgrace. Of course, the judge, Jackson, disagreed. She said there was nothing unfair, phony, or disgraceful about the investigation or the prosecution. She said, at the core, Mr. Stone is an insecure person who craves and recklessly pursues attention. Nothing about this case was a joke, she says. The judge was not happy, clearly. And so he, by the way, while this trial was going on, he was violating the judge's orders not to make public statements about the case, which he's been warned. And shortly after he was charged, he posted a photo of the judge on social media. Now get a load of this, people, with what appeared to be the crosshairs of a gun sight next to her head. Cannot make that stuff up. That's Roger Stone for you, which is why the judge now has hit back and said enough is enough. Now, Trump said that, you know, that Stone was not involved in our campaign at all, but that I terminated Roger Stone as a campaign advisor, calling him a publicity seeker, is what Trump said. And a lot of people are asking, why doesn't Trump just pardon the whole parade, which we're talking about the whole Russia parade? Brian, let me get a quick opinion from you on that.
I'm kind of torn on that, Malcolm. Part of me says yes, because really it's kind of a fruit of the poison tree type situation.
That's right.
The whole investigation was started off false pretenses. It was a very illegitimate and very out of sequence investigation. And I really think everything should be thrown out. And legally, that's the correct answer. The fruit of the poison tree is a very common tactic. It's a very common theme. And that means anything you get from getting something wrong goes away.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to agree with that. Now, is Roger Stone a complete total jerk? Probably. Is he a showboat and a pain in the rear end? Most definitely. But unfortunately, that's not a crime, or most of Congress would be in jail right now. So that's not a crime.
When you think about the fact of how much lying has gone on here from the get-go with Russia, and when Brian says, well, Congress, well, yeah, they'd all be locked up 100 times over, for God's sakes. And here we are talking about destroying all these lives. And are these people quieter boys and girls? Hell no, they're not. But then again, who is today? What human being is, I ask you? And which member of Congress would fall into that category? Not a single one. And yet that's what happens here as they tear lives apart. What I'm saying is this is all just theater. Media, political theater is all this is, as the corruption runs rampant in Washington. These people, it really, this should not be lost on any American, Dennis. You know what I'm talking about here.
Oh, yeah, I do. And I completely agree with it. It's a smokescreen for other things that are going on that should be prosecuted. I mean, you know, Barr's sitting on a whole bunch of indictments that he's had Durham looking at for months, years actually, and they need to come out. Timing, however, there's a tacticalness to justice that you just can't ignore, and I'm kind of torn on this the blanket pardon theory, right, which is going around, in that if you blanket pardon everybody now, mm-hmm, you've basically removed one side of things again. And so the other side is going to go like, well, you know, if you're going to pardon everybody over there, eventually everybody's going to get pardoned over here. So why are we even bothering to look at this? I think it's important for a little bit longer to let these processed crimes sit. I'm fortunate for the people whose lives are being ruined at the moment, but it is important to have that one side of the scale have weight on it, because we need to put weight on the other side of the scale and balance it out, and then take everything off afterwards.
Political theater is all this is. Got to play the game. That's what Dennis is saying, more or less. Got to play the game. Got to play the game. Well, listen, I want to talk about the last story here in the top news here is Afghanistan. You hear a lot about this Taliban agreement happening between the Taliban and the United States. Secretary of State Pompeo came out. Well, he said in a statement, Pompeo said, that we've come to an understanding with the Taliban on a significant and nationwide reduction in violence across Afghanistan. A deal is expected to be signed if the week-long agreement to reduce violence holds. Ilana Friedman, you know, they are hoping to get this deal, but here's what strikes me about this, Ilana. The Taliban are negotiating right now pretty quickly, and they're actually trying to be patient, although there are, as I said last week, there are a lot of rogue tribal groups in Afghanistan, and the whole thing you could blow up in any second with the level of violence out there. But I think they're doing their darndest right now to stay out of the trouble, because they want this deal, the Taliban, because they want the United States gone. They want those troops out of there because they want to get back to controlling their environment and the corruption in Afghanistan. How do you believe the Taliban, even if there's an agreement that comes forth, is it even worth the paper it's written on, is what I ask you.
You know, Malcolm, I don't think it is. I think that this kind of deal making with these people, the Taliban specifically, and the Afghanis in general, is more than just a waste of time. The futility of this is so stark, because this deal, first of all, the Taliban will not stay with it. They will not. They will agree to almost anything. Although the last thing I heard was that they had not agreed to end the violence, which is what it's all supposed to be all about. I honestly think that we should finally realize that we have no business there. I really believe that, because I don't think anything that we want to do for them, any kind of democratic processes that we want to put in place, they don't want it. You know, there may be people in Afghanistan, I'm sure there are, who think democracy is a great idea, but overall, this is a culture that goes back centuries, and it's a tribal culture. It has no interest in democracy.
I just really question if this is even worth the paper it's written on, because I've never seen anything worthwhile come from that. Nobody holds their word up there. So what's the answer here, buddy?
Well, the sad part about it is there's two main components missing from this negotiation.
Okay.
And one of them is they have not invited the actual president of Afghanistan, has not been a part of the process. Which makes it really kind of questionable to begin with, because they hate him so bad. And the second big element is the Taliban, because they're not actually talking to the Taliban. They're going through an intermediary, the Al-Qaeda network, which started off as an organized crime network, and they're a guerrilla force. They're not theological or ideological driven. They're basically just a bunch of tribal thugs who've been stealing cars and running opium for the last 100 years, and it's what they enjoy. And they've actually been in firefights against Al-Qaeda and against the Taliban, and they fought over territory. It is a very tribal-driven system, which historically the United States government has done horrible at. We've totally ruined Africa because we don't understand tribal dynamics. Yemen is a disaster we created, not understanding tribal dynamics. And I don't see anybody involved in this negotiation from the White House that has any better understanding than the last group did. And that paper is not worth the paper. That words are nothing, worth nothing whatsoever.
Yeah, well, no, it's well said. And Dennis, let me give you the last word on this then. And that is that, you know, you hear the argument here. There really is no other alternative, though, is there, beyond the, you know, this compromise. And by the way, this was all based on the reduction of violence after last Friday night, midnight. This is all dependent on that for the 7-day period of time, I might add. Anything could go wrong there. But what do you think?
our best course of action is to do something similar to what we did in Syria. We need to pull back, get out of there before November. We understand that that place is going to degenerate into the same tribal killing that it has been doing for centuries. The only U.S. interest remaining in the region is we want to make sure that another Al-Qaeda cell does not take root in that area to threaten the United States. Mm-hmm. And other than that, we got no business being there.
Stay right there, friends. More Viewpoint in just a moment.
The America Out Loud Talk Radio app is on Android or Apple. It's the perfect way to listen in to the new generation of talk shows and hosts who are ready to inform and inspire.
It's your news and entertainment network. News blogs, informative podcasts, entertaining videos, or listen to 24/7 talk radio. On our free apps on Apple, Android, or Alexa. We the People, AmericaOutloud.com is the voice of liberty and justice for all. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio. There are three words I have for you now. Russia, Russia, Russia. That's what we keep talking about here in American politics. And, you know, I started to think for a little bit. I thought maybe we were done with Russia. I had hoped, I'd prayed that maybe we're done with the whole, you know, Mueller and collusion and everything else and the elections. But no, not to be, people. We're seeing the Russia thing come up again here as we head into another election again. It's interesting or crazy, actually, what we're doing here. We seem to play right into their hands. You see, Russia's motivation is to really shake up our political atmosphere here and get into our heads. And I have to tell you, they've done that brilliantly with both Democrats and Republicans alike. It gets very interesting from their people and even more interesting what's happening in the intelligence community. Let's talk about that next, friends, here. And I'd like you to welcome on here Nicholas Giordano. He's a professor of political science and host of the PAS Report. It's a political podcast here. It does a great job. It's good to have Professor Giordano here with us. And Ava Armstrong is with us as well for this segment. Ava's a political commentator and radio personality here at America Out Loud. She is a best-selling author. Her books are on Amazon. And visit the America Out Loud bookstore. All great books there. In fact, you'll get the one in our next guest, which I was telling you about earlier in the show, is a must get. And I don't want you to lose sight of that. That's with the gentleman out of Europe I was telling you about there, Dr. Joel Holmes. And that's on the coronavirus. So all those books are in the bookstore, in the nav. The link is right on the nav bar at AmericaOutloud.com, friends. You want to be informed of these things. It's most important here. So Russia. Nick, you have a tweet out there which caught my eye, and I said, we got to get you on here. And you say this, no real thought or analysis. World politics is about power and influence. Ask yourself, in the last 3 years, has Russia, and that's a hashtag Russia, by the way, gained power or lost power? Power is a zero-sum game. Why would Russia want real Donald Trump and the policies that have diminished their power? And you know, Nick, your tweet just spoke to me because that is exactly the question that nobody really answers, because that's what the way I see it as well. Why would they want a Donald? So what's behind this? Is this a fallacy or just another spin operation, or what's going on here, Nick?
It is a fallacy. It's the fact that the media and the Democrats, they want to hurt Trump any which way they can. So they're bringing up Russia. I think we're at, 5.0, 6.0? You know, they keep reintroducing Russia into the equation. But when you look at it logically, so I've been involved in Homeland Security and emergency management prior to teaching. I've been involved in intelligence assessments. It doesn't make any sense for Russia to want President Trump to get reelected, because international politics is always about power, and power is a zero-sum game. In order for Russia to gain power, then another country must lose power, particularly a country like the United States or a country like China. Well, Russia was gaining power under the Obama administration, towards the end of the Bush administration, then throughout the Obama administration. So it realistically makes no sense that they'd want to deviate from that trend of gaining power. To say that they support President Trump is ridiculous, because over the last 3 years, we've seen increased funding in NATO. We've killed a number of Russian mercenaries inside Syria. We've become the largest oil and natural gas producer, which dramatically hurts Russia, especially as prices come down. We've implemented some of the toughest sanctions on Russia. So why would Russia want Donald Trump to be reelected when they've become significantly weaker in the last 3 years? It doesn't make any sense, and it's a logical question that the media will never bring up.
So why do they keep spinning it then, number one? And next of all, are people buying this Russia thing, do you think, honestly, Nick?
At this stage, no. I think at the beginning, you know, when President Trump was first elected, I think people were buying into it. But over the course of the last 3 years, we've seen a number of the – you had the dossier that was completely debunked. Mm-hmm. You had the Mueller investigation that took 3 years, and it turned out that there was no collusion that existed. And I think people are largely starting to tune it out, and I think Democrats are starting to look completely ridiculous, as well as the media, by keep on going back to the Russia well. I mean, what's next? Are we going to bring up Stormy Daniels again?
Yeah.
So when we're looking at it, I think that Democrats and the media are inside their own little bubbles, and they don't realize how dumb they actually look when they keep on screaming Russia, Russia, Russia. And when you read the actual articles, mm-hmm. you'll see, and even inside the intelligence community, they never really said that Russia wants Donald Trump to win the election. They said that Russia's meddling in the election. Well, yeah, that's fair game. Russia is meddling in the election. They have since the Cold War. And this is nothing new. The technology has changed. Mm-hmm. But realistically, the methods haven't changed.
That's right.
So it's not like this is something out of left field that we don't expect.
When the Democrat Party has lost the power they've lost, and, you know, I'll say this, Ava, when you cannot argue policy, I mean, what kind of policies are they going to argue? Their initial assessments of Trump was that he was going to put us into war. This president wants out of wars. It's the direct opposite. The initial argument was that this president was going to make an economic train wreck of us. The markets were going to crash. This president has done, has put it on steroids. Every argument they had on policy back in 2015 and 2016 has been the direct opposite impact. So at this point, I mean, it really looks like a loser's game when that you've got to go back to the initial well. I don't see what else there is to it. Do you?
Well, when the Democrats accuse you of something, it's usually them doing it. So you have to always remember that as well. The leftist playbook, I call it, okay? Whatever they're doing, they're accusing you of doing. And that's been proven out over the last 3.5 years here. I mean, if you can't see that, it's so plain to see. Actually, what Democrats have been doing during Trump's administration, they've been visiting in Ukraine and other countries as well, undermining President Trump at every turn. Russia, by the way, has the GDP of France. So I'm not really, really that worried. They have a lot of nukes. But I think we should make Russia an ally and not an enemy. We have a lot more in common with Russia than we do with, say, China, okay? And China is the real danger, as you well know. Much more powerful, much more expansive. They've taken over, you know, massive amounts of territory in a short amount of time. They're infiltrating our economy, our universities, our entire communities here in America. China has embedded themselves in our economy and in our country. And we should be very, very leery of this. We should be terrified of it.
We have said repeatedly on this platform that, again, Russia makes a better ally than a foe. And Trump recognized that early on. But again, the establishment here corrupted the environment so badly, it made it impossible for us to deal with Putin on any kind of level here. I want to talk about Richard Grenell next year. This is really something else, people, this next part of the story here. I mean, it is one for the ages here, I have to tell you. And that so he has now been put in as the Acting Director of National Intelligence, the DNI. So he is now the acting director. Now, he's the ambassador to Germany. So he got in there, and he immediately removed one of the veteran intelligence officer who was number two. at the DNI, the office of the DNI there. He removed him. And on Thursday, he brought on board a former staff of Representative Devin Nunes in there. He also asked to see the intelligence behind what Nick and Ava were just talking about, the classified briefing of this Russia business. He wants to see it. He's demanding, he wants to see that right now because he doesn't believe it. Again, back to spin, what we're talking about here, you know. He's a very smart guy. People don't, they pick fights with him. He's a Trump kind of guy because he carries a stick and he uses it. Let me put it that way. So he stays pretty aggressive here on things. And it's interesting because Chancellor Angela Merkel told Vice President Mike Pence, in fact, that the ambassador's style required some getting used to. And one person with knowledge of the exchange said that this person added that Merkel has never warmed to Grinnell and that diplomats are supposed to be diplomatic. And this is not his specialty. So you hear that, Nick, and about Grinnell. So he's in there right now. He's being called an attack dog as he's kind of, you know, and you got to remember now, the intelligence community has been President Trump's biggest problem, actually. Was this a good move?
Well, I think it was a smart move. I mean, the acting Directorate of National Intelligence, he had to go because when you're an acting director, you only have 210 days. And if you're not appointed to the full-time permanent position, then he has to step aside. So President
Trump, already at the maximum, Nick, of that? Was he already there?
Yes.
I'll be darned. Okay.
Yes. So it's not like President Trump's removing him because of the whole Russia thing. He has no choice.
That's a good point.
So when you look at Ambassador Grinnell, he's someone that President Trump trusts, and that's really important to President Trump. He feels that he's been burned by the intelligence community several times throughout his administration, that there's people there that are trying to undermine him. And Grinnell's the type that he's going to take a hands-on approach, and he's going to make sure that the intelligence that comes out isn't manipulated for political purposes.
Do you think that the question now is who becomes the permanent director? And the reason I say that is because this story takes another turn and a twist here. So the president throws out there a couple of days ago about Doug Collins potentially being the intel chief there. And he floated his name out there that he may nominate him as the permanent DNI. And he said that he's looking at three or four people he's got as potential for that job. Well, Doug Collins shot back immediately on national television and said that, he shot down the speculation and said that he would refuse the nomination and that he is really focused on the Senate race in Georgia. And he is in a very edgy race down there that the president doesn't quite know what to do because he's got two loyalists that are fighting for that same Senate seat, Senator Kelly Loeffler, who was put in by the governor as well, I might add. It gets very tricky now what happens with all this. And so the question I wonder now, Ava, with Grinnell, first of all, Grinnell is interesting as the acting director that Trump did exactly what Nick just said, put him in there to sort of straighten that out. But what happens now? Do you think I'm wondering, I mean, Grinnell, they say, was looking for a bigger position with the administration anyways, and he never really laid down roots in Germany. He did a lot of temporary things there because he considered his position temporary. They say he's looking for this, which is why he's in there doing a lot of what he's going to do. Might the president keep him in a permanent role there? Might he push Doug Collins to take it? Or maybe he goes with somebody else for that role. What do you think?
Oh, no. I think Doug Collins will stay where he is. I think he wants to win that seat. And, you know, he's very dedicated to the people of his state. And that's fine. I'm glad he said what he said. And that clears the air and it clears the deck for President Trump to choose somebody that's, you know, really wants the job.
One of the biggest problems this administration has had from day number one and before day number one that has worked to undermine him. A lot of the established players in the deep state are in that community, correct?
Yeah, absolutely. And the problem, it's not the rank and file intel people that are a problem. It's when their work product gets kicked up to senior leaders that have been there, either appointed under the last administration or just career people that have become corrupted by the deep state that will change and manipulate intelligence in order to do someone's political bidding. Now, as far as Rick Grinnell, I think that he is qualified. If you look at an ambassador, they handle intelligence quite often. Rick Grinnell has been involved in the United Nations for several years. Mm-hmm. And so it's not like he's someone that hasn't been exposed to intelligence. He knows intelligence. He's had a clearance for quite some time. And I have no problem with him being there. And basically what you want in these positions is you want leadership. You know, that's some of the most important things. So I have no problem with Rick Grenell. And I think it is better off that Doug Collins either stays in the House or goes to the Senate, because he's a good Trump ally to have. You know, President Trump has been picking a lot of people. You know, Mark Meadows is now coming out of the House. He's going to be joining the Trump administration, I believe, in January of 2021, if President Trump remains, if he wins re-election. And you don't want to take too many of the good people, the allies that you have, out of Congress.
No, that's for sure, because that would be another void there. And by the way, this seat that we're speaking about with the DNI was another one that Representative John Ratcliffe, the Republican out of Texas, was nominated previously for as well. And he declined that after a few days. So that role is under heavy scrutiny. What's interesting about Grenell, don't lose sight of, he is a disruptor. And that's what he's doing right in that community right now. But that's what the intelligence community needs, is they need to become themselves more intelligent. I like the way Nick says leadership. He's so right. I mean, we've lacked the leadership in that community for a while.
And I just want to jump in a second, because with the DNI was created after 9/11, and right. It's never truly been flushed out the way it should.
That's right.
Meaning that you still have a lot of territorial issues between the different intel agencies that exist, where the CIA, the FBI, they're all supposed to be sharing information through the DNI. Mm-hmm. And we know they don't. And they don't, because they don't want to reveal who their sources are, what their methods are, what information they're getting in. And so as the head of the DNI, it really takes a lot. And I think Rick Grenell has that in him to coordinate between the different agencies and force them to put their intelligence forward.
The numbers on this coronavirus they're startling, to say the least. And if we even understand or know what those real numbers are, and you know, that may be anybody's guess at this point, but we do know this. In a matter of about 12 weeks, it has brought the mighty Chinese technology and financial empire to its knees. You see the latest information on Apple, and you see the stock market all over the place, and you see the losses and these companies that are coming out, because guess what? A lot of manufacturing is done in China, people. That's the whole globalist viewpoint that we've been talking about for some time now. Now, the government of China views this virus as an existential threat. And there's a lot to this story, believe me. Something is different about this virus, our next guest says, I want to introduce you to. And so let me bring him on now, and we'll talk about what is different about this virus. And please welcome Dr. Joel S. Holmes. And Dr. Holmes is an engineer who works as a private industry intelligence agent. He helps U.S. companies protect their technologies from industrial espionage. He also has experience in epidemic mitigation and control. In fact, quite frankly, point of interest here, he provided training to financial institutions during the SARS epidemic. You may recall that back in 2002, 2003, and helped prepare those companies with very unique methods to mitigate disruption, and there's a whole lot of that may happen yet. He worked in China for several years as an engineer, and he came to admire and love the Chinese people. He has many friends out there. And now Dr. Holmes is now, you're hearing him here the first time. He will be a weekly contributor, a writer, and certainly a commentator here on the network. So we are delighted to welcome him. Can't really be under better circumstances since we're talking about this. And there is a write-in, his first column and article you will see on the platform. So you say here, something's different about this virus. It seems important to ask what this difference is. I want to put it right to you, Dr. Holmes. What's different about this virus?
This virus has very quickly caused an enormous amount of suffering in China, in the city of Wuhan and the province where it's located, Hebei province. In addition to that, we can say the whole fabric of life has collapsed. This isn't the ordinary seasonal virus, and it's not even the ordinary influenza epidemic. It's much worse. People are unable to work. They're unable to go to work. They're under quarantine. Very large. In China now today, There are about 350 million people under some kind of quarantine. It means that some of them are actually in locked in to quarantine places. They could be a hospital, could be a railroad station, which has been modified by putting beds in it, and they've lost the ability to have free movement, which is awful, of course, but there isn't any choice, actually, because if people are infected and they're out, this is a very, very contagious disease.
Now, Dr. Holmes, we're talking, from the numbers you just gave, what you're saying is we're talking about a quarter of the population in China.
Yes, but they're not all under lockdown. This includes things like Beijing, which is is sort of a closed city. Not exactly, but something like it. In other words, people from other areas of the country are requested not to come. But if they do come, they have to register, mm-hmm. and they have to have medical checks. So it ranges from that kind of thing to the lockdown, where people lose the ability to move around freely.
You say in your book here, you call it a pandemic, and we know what that means. And you say, and this pandemic is heading right in the direction of North America, Europe, Africa, Asia, everywhere. And you say we must be knowledgeable. And yes, I agree with that. But you also say on guard and ready. So I just want to go right there. Number one, what are the real numbers we're looking at? And number two, how do we protect ourselves? When you say on guard and ready, how can we be ready for something like this, for God's sake?
In terms of the real numbers, there are a couple of things that are quite important. And one is that I always point out when I talk about this, that there are numbers. Everything is based on numbers when you're in a pandemic, but it's more than a number, it's a person. And if it's just unbelievable how many people have suffered, whole families. The pattern of this disease is that if one person in the family gets it, it's pretty certain the whole family is going to be wiped out. If they get the more serious form of the influenza, some people get only a mild case, but in the case that it's the more aggressive form, then the whole family gets wiped out. And numbers which are important in terms of understanding what's happening are that, this is according to the Lancet Medical Journal, every 6.4 days, roughly every week, the number of infected people doubles. And most, I don't know if people have done this, but it's interesting to take a small number like 1,000 and then double it over and over and over again. And at the end of a month, you have 1 million, so or more than 1 million. And that's what's happening. And that's one of the reasons this is so dangerous. It's highly infectious. And there's a young woman who went with her family before the restaurants were closed down. There were 14 people, and she was a carrier. And 7 of the 14 caught the disease just from sitting around a table and having dinner. This gives some idea how infectious it is. The numbers get to be huge very quickly. And it overwhelms any capability that exists to deal with it. The medical institutions have run out of masks, protective clothing, eye goggles. What medicines there were, they have run out because there are just so many people that need help.
And let me tell folks now, there's very limited on time today for this conversation, but there will be a much bigger conversation. We'll get into a lot more details with Dr. Holmes next week on The Voice of a Nation on Thursday on my daily program, 6 p.m. Eastern Time, you can hear a much more in-depth conversation with Dr. Joel Holmes and myself as we really get into the origins and some of the points of this. And in the meantime, read that article on the platform. And the book is in the America Out Loud bookstore, friends. And it is a must-read, I'm telling you. Survival Strategies, Coronavirus Pandemic 2020, a virus weaponized in China for biological warfare, is the name of that book. Tell us again, how concerned should we be here when you say it's headed to the direction of North America, Europe, Africa, Asia, everywhere, and we need to be on guard and ready? What does that really mean, Dr. Holmes, in brass tacks to all of us?
In terms of what's coming, I read that the director of the centers, and we have to listen to them, we have to listen to our doctors, and we have to listen to the Centers for Disease Control. Mm-hmm. They do know what they're doing. The director said that they're in the process now of aggressive containment. They're doing everything they can, and they're doing a good job of it. There's a limit, though, to what can be done. And there's a possibility that it's, well, of course, we hope it doesn't show up. Mm-hmm. But if it does, it will spread quickly. In South Korea, something very interesting, when something like this starts, it's quite normal to be very apprehensive and afraid. And in Korea, there are, I think, are 140 cases of it now, South Korea, and 70 of them are in one particular city. And it's as if the city is shut down. There's nobody going anywhere.
Wow.
This is good in a sense that it keeps the virus from spreading. But in another sense, it's good to keep a calm.
Let me be direct and just ask you, in your opinion, do you see this spreading in our communities in the United States, in North America?
There's a professor from Harvard University, and he stated that between 40% and 80% of the world's population will be infected by this virus.
Yeah, I've seen that.
Yeah, and
just think of those numbers, what he just said. I mean, think of those numbers, people here. Wow, absolutely a wow, isn't it now? Yeah.
It is. Many of the people will get very mild cases. They won't even know they have it. It would be like having a flu or something. And many people will not even know, have any symptoms at all. Hmm. In China now, for example, the cities are under lockdown. Mm-hmm. Things aren't moving in and out. Products aren't moving in and out. Food is in short supply. If people are locked into their buildings and quarantined, they can't get food. Or they can, but it's not a very efficient system. So there's malnutrition. And this is a very...
Yeah, a lot of repercussions.
Serious matter, yeah. I mean, people can't... Makes it worse if there's malnutrition.
All right. I'm really amazed as you look at the history of these sort of pandemics and viruses in our history. It is fascinating. And then you bring it back to the conversation about the fight of good versus evil on this planet Earth that we're on. Should not be lost on anybody, friends. And I hope you'll help us with the good fight forward. But there's a lot of work to do here. You'll find the article again from Dr. Joel Holmes back at AmericaOutLoud.com. It is a must-read. It'll get you informed. It's a biological warfare weapon. Bad news about the novel coronavirus. The book is in the America Out Loud bookstore. I cannot speak any more highly than for you to get the book. You gotta read this. I read it all. It's important for us to be in the know. Knowledge is key with these kinds of things. Being knowledgeable is part of the fight here, if you have a fighting chance, if this does strike you and your family. In the meantime, friends, thank you again to all of our guests here on Viewpoint, and thank you for being part of the journey here. It's time to get involved and get loud.